Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The unemployment rate in Ohio continues to fall, and here in Central Ohio, it's hit the lowest point since the beginning of the economic downturn, 5.5%. Is this an indication of a bright economic future for Ohio in 2013, or will uncertainty from the looming debt ceiling crisis and other political debates and things I don't even know about in Washington dampen the state's growth? With us to look forward to Central Ohio's economic future is Bill Lafayette. He's an economist and owner of Regionomics. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Thank you, Ann.
Also with us is Doug Buchanan. He's managing editor for Columbus Business First. Welcome back, Doug.
Thank you.
So in Ohio and in other states around the country, unemployment is down, especially in Central Ohio. Home sales are up, but that's the sort of stuff lay people look at and say, yay us. But what are some of the other major changes that people should pay attention to when it comes to the economy?
I think we need to worry a lot about consumer confidence. Consumer confidence took a serious hit during the fiscal cliff wrangling. And consumers, I think, rightly recognize that that problem is not yet behind us. There's more to be fought over.
It was surprising, though, at Christmas time, it seemed like the confidence levels were up compared to last year.
Certainly consumers were ready to spend, and they did over Christmas. It was a good overall, a pretty good season. But again, if you're talking about that confidence, as soon as the Christmas season was over, all the attention went right back to the fiscal cliff. And as Bill pointed out, it's consumer confidence, but it's also business owner confidence, which was shaken pretty badly that Congress was not going to get us out of this mess. And that has a direct effect on hiring.
And that's coming off a pretty long term of tough money. It's hard to get money out of the banks right now if you're a business, particularly a small business. So how are small businesses stacking up in this economy now?
Well, I mean, they're struggling as much as anybody else. But again, trying to turn that corner. The economy is improving, as you said. It's just a matter of what most people are concerned about is jobs. And when are they going to start adding jobs? And I don't think, especially for small businesses, you're going to see much job growth until you see job growth in big businesses. And all of them are just looking for some certainty that 2013 is actually going to improve as the year goes forward. Most people think it will, but there's a lot of obstacles, and you just don't know.
They keep kicking the proverbial can down the road. It's getting old now. We know what we're talking about. We're talking about the deficit. As long as they keep kicking that can down the road, aren't those doubts about the economy going to persist, Bill?
Absolutely. And that is something that I am really, really wanting to see. It matters what the tax situation is. It matters how profits are treated. It matters how income is treated. Business owners, I think, are saying, just tell me what you want to do, and I will work with it. But until you tell me what to do, I am going to continue to sit on the sidelines and assume the worst.
I mean, there's an enormous amount of responsibility and as Bill said, regulation when you take on new workers. And so without that certainty that you know exactly, you know, what is going to be expected of you as a business owner in the next 6 months, in the next year and beyond, your default is going to be sit and wait.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the local economy going forward. If you have a question or comment for my guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm talking with Bill Lafayette, an economist, owner of Regionomics, and also Doug Buchanan, managing editor for Columbus Business First. So there have been a lot of jobs added, though, especially in Central Ohio. Who is hiring, then, if not the segment you were talking about, Bill?
We've gotten a lot of jobs in healthcare. We've gotten a lot of jobs in retail. Financial activities is doing far, far better than average. Chase continues to add employees here. Our many insurance companies continue to add a lot of employees here. And that's kind of a statewide phenomenon. Insurance statewide is extremely important and growing. Here, insurance employment's double the national average. So those are the sectors that have been growing way above average.
If you look at insurance too, the Medicaid program, they're switching to a test run where they're turning over a lot of patients to managed care, and mm-hmm. those companies are hiring like crazy. We're talking upwards of 1,000 jobs here in the next few years at call centers, caseworkers, that sort of thing, as that shift moves over to the private sector. And then, of course, you have the hospitals who continue to build, continue to expand out, and you know, so they're hiring as well.
There was a report, I think, in your publication, Ted, that the director of the Ohio Department of Health said
right.
that building out isn't necessarily a good thing.
Well, it's interesting because if you look in other markets, just because of the trends in healthcare and how payments are going and the level of competition, you're not seeing this building boom in many other places. Right now it's a local phenomenon as they all compete to build new towers and outpatient centers. But if you ask the hospitals, I mean, especially on an individual level, they have the models that they say that this can work. And until it all shakes out, I mean, we just don't know. And that's going to be a much longer term proposition. In the near term, it's creating construction jobs. And after that, it's going to create a lot of healthcare jobs.
I'm thinking that one of the reasons why all this is going on and why the models are working at the moment is that the hospitals here are attracting a larger and larger number of patients from outside yeah. Central Ohio. That benefits our economy in a whole host of ways. It brings in dollars that weren't in our economy so that they can start circulating around our economy. It also brings in families of the patients who don't feel like tourists, but they spend like tourists. And so that's all well and good, and that's been a real serious trend lately. But at some point, that trend is going to have to slow. We have excellent hospitals here, but there are excellent hospitals in other places too. So there's kind of a limit to this growth, and I'm a little concerned over the long term.
That it's a bubble? Something like a bubble or...
Well, not necessarily a bubble that will crash down, but a bubble that will...
It will slow. It won't crash.
There's a cap to it. I mean, you know, Children's is the best example of this. I mean, they are positioning themselves as a world-class research and treatment facility. So you can imagine the scope of the market that they're looking at for patients to come in. Ohio State's trying to do the same thing with the James Cancer Hospital. They're just trying to make it so that anyone in, you know, an X number of mile radius, when they think of top tier cancer, they're going to think Ohio State. So eventually there will be a cap to that, but that's the model that these hospitals are going after. And that's why they think that they can sustain it for a long time.
Rod in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Rod.
Yes, good morning. Wanted to throw a couple of things into the conversation here. It's my understanding that basically the median income has gone down. We've traded, manufacturing jobs for service sector jobs, which don't pay as much. And also, people have been dipping into their various assets. They've been borrowing against their retirement accounts and against their houses to sustain their level of living. And I wanted to find out what's going on with that.
Consumer credits.
Well, just real quick on the incomes. We were talking about this before the show that there has certainly been that hollowing out of the middle class that we've seen, especially when you talk about the manufacturing jobs, which paid very well, but have disappeared. And the manufacturing, we are seeing manufacturing come back, and Bill has some good numbers on this, but it's not in the numbers that we once saw. So that you're, you know, so that yes, you are talking about a big swath of the middle class that just doesn't have that avenue to, you know, a good solid employment.
Manufacturing jobs are fundamentally different from what they were, say, 20 years ago. 20 years ago, you just kind of turned wrenches and all that. Now you're running a robot.
Right.
And so you don't necessarily need a college degree to do that, but you definitely need training beyond high school. And so one of the challenges that manufacturers are facing is the challenge of finding skilled workers with that kind of expertise.
And yet Honda, things are looking up in Honda.
They're investing like crazy. They've in both their Marysville plant, the East Liberty plant next door, and then out in Western Ohio, they've got the transmission plant and the engine plant out there. They're putting millions of dollars into each of those as they ramp up production here. They're talking about building the Accord Hybrid here. The Acura NSX will get built here when that car is ready. So they are definitely doubling down on Ohio, and that's going to have ancillary benefits with all of their suppliers and their networks. So Ohio is a great example of the kind of manufacturing that Bill talked about that's coming back in Ohio. But again, these are they would be considered high tech jobs. There's obviously the productivity there is out of control with the amount of technology and robots. What was the stat you had, Bill, about the productivity?
Before the recession, the amount that a typical worker could produce rose 51% in the space of 6 years. And that is just absolutely off the charts. And I think one of the reasons why you see manufacturers adding jobs nationally and adding a whole lot of jobs in Ohio is that they hit a productivity wall. We did not. We're actually down 1,400 manufacturing jobs since the recovery began at the beginning of 2010. But it seems to me that the trends nationally and statewide are flattening a little bit because technology is starting to take control again. The developments that Doug cites suggest that maybe we're going to start turning around and outperforming the national average and the state average in the
in productivity
in employment.
In employment, the productivity, that 51% increase.
Mm-hmm.
That means what a individual worker is putting out has increased 51%.
Correct.
Okay, but their wages and their compensation and their standard of living hasn't necessarily kept pace with that.
Well, certainly not to 51%, right?
I mean, but not even close.
Not even close. I mean, it's a great story on the business side because you're talking about tremendous economic output and very efficient economic output. But again, for the human resources side, they just don't need as many workers to do that. And it's not just manufacturing. I mean, this is a story that has been told in America for the last 20 years, that technology keeps getting companies more efficient. And as Bill mentioned with manufacturing, that's kind of what we're looking at across all industries as companies look at the amount of work that they are producing and the amount of work that they're having these current employees do, and can they handle it? And at what point does that just become too much and you hit that wall and you have to go and add more workers?
Right.
Rod, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for your time. Bye-bye.
We're talking about the Central Ohio economy, looking forward to 2013, perhaps beyond. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page, too, and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, it's a new presidential term, a new global time, maybe time for a new American foreign policy. We'll explore. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 14 degrees in downtown Columbus. Expect some snow showers late this afternoon. Less than half an inch of accumulation and a high of 19 today. Some light snow likely tonight, a low of 11 degrees. Mostly sunny Thursday and a high of 22. Support comes from United Way of Central Ohio. The 20th annual Champion of Children event features Jeffrey Canada, president of the Harlem Children's Zone, who will discuss education and neighborhood revitalization with host Fred Anderley, Wednesday, February 13th at the Southern Theater. Tickets at liveunitedcentralohio.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about the local economy, looking ahead to 2013 with Bill Lafayette, economist and owner of Regionomics. Also, Doug Buchanan, managing editor for Columbus Business First. You know, we started out the conversation off the air with the Doug's the good news guy and Bill's the bad news guy. And I thought we could just cut to the chase and talk about, I guess, just that overall glow. Maybe we've been talking about that now, but is there anything that we've left out?
Well, I just think that
the good stuff.
We at the paper try to find the stories of companies that are growing and companies that are creating jobs, companies that are you know, actually out there putting their neck on the line and doing these things. And Bill's a stats guy. He's going to sit and look at the numbers and tell us that, you know, and a good anecdote does not necessarily mean the good growth that we're seeing. Is that right?
So, Bill, what's gone wrong or what's not going right?
Well, I guess I'm to a certain extent a bad news guy,
which, by the way, is unusual.
But actually, we are doing a whole lot better than average. We're just not doing quite as well as we want to see. My forecast for 2013. Expects us to add upwards of 13,000 net new jobs in the region. That could mean that we will have gained back all the jobs that we lost in the recession a year or two earlier than the U.S. as a whole does. But 1.4% is just a touch higher than our population growth. So we've still got an awful lot of unemployed workers who need jobs.
Right. And it's the underemployed, the part-timers. I can see from Bill's point of view, I mean, you see this job growth. I mean, it's good. We're seeing 13,000 new jobs next year. It's just everything has been skewed the last few years because of the massive shake that we went through, the shock to the system like none of us has seen.
And a lot of the people who are hopefully going to get a job maybe have been unemployed for quite a while now. Spent all their savings, maybe dipped into their 401ks or whatnot, and it's not like just because they got a job they're going to run out and be paint the town red.
Right. I think that there's a debate going on about going back to consumer confidence, even has consumer attitude toward spending and debt been fundamentally altered in this country, or is it just a short term blip? And once the good times start coming in a year or two, we'll go back to the ways that we always have, and which is spend beyond our means. But you're absolutely right that for a good number of people, any savings that they have, it's just been wiped out.
And along that line, the average age of an auto on the road now is the highest it has ever been. And at some point, those cars are going to break down and they're going to need to be replaced. And so people may be somewhat more cautious about the kind of debt they take on to finance those purchases, but those purchases are going to have to be made.
And they have started. We were just at the our reporter was just at the Detroit Auto Show last week, and every manufacturer they're talking lots of new models. Most of them had very, very good years, if not record years, and they're looking to sell more this year, and that includes Honda. They are hoping to have a record year for North American sales this year, and the development pipeline is very strong because of what Bill said. People need to replace these cars. It's kind of like cable TV. People, they're not going to do without their cars. And at some point, as he said, it's going to break down. And you're going to need new ones. And so you are seeing sales just booming in the auto industry, and that definitely is translating into employment.
Not counting the auto bailout, which clearly had an impact on Honda's decisions, I would imagine. But as far as the stimulus goes, and what happened with that? Is there any sense yet about what the impact was on Central Ohio or Ohio when it comes to that spending?
I think the impact overall was positive. The stimulus needed to happen. Mark Zandi, who's an economist with Moody's, did a study that showed that the unemployment rate would have peaked at 15% rather than 10% without the stimulus, and the recession would have ended not in the middle of 2009. It would have ended in the first quarter of 2012. And so the stimulus, as far as it went, was effective. There were perhaps problems with finding more shovel-ready projects. There needed to be more immediate spending than it was, so it was by no means perfect, but it was something that needed to happen and something that definitely had an impact.
I mean, if you look at it, the other side, we have this sequestration issue where we have mandated spending cuts.
Is it 10% across the board? Is that what it is?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Whatever it is, we're talking about just billions and billions of dollars that you would immediately take out of the economy. And everybody agrees that that would be devastating for a range of industries and for the job market. So I think if you look back in the other direction, back at the time of the stimulus, when the economy had just been flattened, were you not to then pump that money into the economy at that point, what would it look like? I mean, it's kind of hard to quantify on a local level exactly how the stimulus helped, or what percentage of growth. But I don't think it's disputable that it helped, bring us back and more quickly than we would have if we didn't do it.
The idea of the shovel ready is interesting to me because I wonder whether there's some communities and some places that are more shovel ready than others. In other words, more depressed areas in the country, they didn't have plans in the works already for construction or rebuilding roads or bridges and that sort of thing. And it's always I've always wondered if those kinds of stimulus projects help places like Columbus in Central Ohio, where we have a million projects shovel ready to go.
Yeah, we do.
Well, over the long run, every project that got done improves our productive capacity, whether it's a road or a bridge or what have you. It's going to have long-term impacts, and that makes the United States more competitive over the long run.
I think President Obama brought up infrastructure in his inauguration speech, I think it was. Mm-hmm. He's putting that back out on the table, that there is definite economic benefits to spending on infrastructure.
And problems ahead if we don't. I mean, the levee system's wearing
collapsing
out.
Collapsing
bridges and so forth.
Yeah.
We all know that. An email from Hal. How can we insist on personal and national fiscal responsibility and financial planning on one hand and wish for greater consumer confidence in the future? Is consumer spending the only way to employ more people? Suppose we depend instead on public infrastructure employment and pay for public service rather than consumer goods, which we just talked about.
Well, I think he's got a really good point. We really have to do both. What I always go back to, though, is the fact that consumer expenditures are 70% of the economy. And generally speaking, consumers ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. But we definitely need these kind of infrastructure expenditures. We've had a really encouraging trend on and off in business capital investment, which again is a very long-term benefit. So we need both. We need all of the above.
You just can't have one without the other. I mean, the U.S. economy especially just will not run without consumers getting out there and spending. Now, you know, there is spending within your means. Obviously, we create bubbles when we go out there and spend like crazy and borrow like crazy. But still, there has to be that level of spending, or else that 70% of the economy just just stalls, and then it just has ripple effects throughout the rest of it.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. 2012 was a very good year for home sales. Central Ohio home sales had their first yearly gain since, I was kind of shocked at this, 2005.
Yeah.
Do we know why that's particularly happened, and what does it mean going forward?
I'm thinking that the reason for that is simply that we didn't go down as far in the recession as a lot of other places did, both in terms of home sales and home prices. And that's generally true of the Central Ohio housing market. Our peaks aren't as high, our valleys aren't as low. And you go back 30, 40 years, and you see that trend on an ongoing basis. Right now, our recovery from the housing bust puts us 15th among all 64 large regions in the country. So we're doing really well. We're down like 6% from that peak. Pittsburgh, on the other hand, is up 5% from that 2007 peak. They've brought it all back.
But Pittsburgh is doing better on an employment basis than we are as well. And so, you know, yeah, those two are obviously tied but again, you know, you're talking seven straight years that the new housing starts that fell. And, just eventually you're going to have that bottom where finally everything shakes out, as Bill has pointed out, we are seeing that swing up in jobs again. So once people get a job, they can not only replace their car, but they can finally move. And once you clear that inventory of houses, you know, most people cannot move until they sell their current house. And so until you start getting that momentum to build on itself, it's just going to just continue to lag.
They're looking at increasing the lending rates for mortgages. Right now, they've kept it at historic lows.
Yes,
I'm sure that's helped.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've pushed that down. It's at historically low levels. I mean, so if you have the wherewithal and the desire to move, certainly you can get a fantastic rate on a mortgage now, and that is what we need as we continue to try to get this going. I mean, 1 year is not exactly a recovery, but it's a great start. Another interesting stat that they said was the number of houses on the market right now is like at a 10-year low. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the unemployed workers who are sitting on the sidelines when are they going to start coming back into the market? When are these people who are sitting in a house that they no longer want, when are they going to start, actually putting it on the market and getting this whole thing moving again?
Oh, go ahead, Bill.
A really interesting thing about the construction stats that Doug made reference to is that when you look at the breakdown between single-unit properties and multiple-unit properties, we're doing really, really well overall, but a much higher proportion of our construction is in the multiple-unit category. Mm-hmm. In the single-unit category, we are about average. And so people are building a lot of apartments. Some of those are condos. Most of them probably are apartments for lease.
Right.
And in long term, there's thoughts that how people view home ownership is going to mm-hmm. change too. There's a couple issues going on. One, the recession and the whole home foreclosure mm-hmm. crisis, but also moving closer into the center cities, mm-hmm. Which breeds apartment lifestyle, condo lifestyle, not single family housing right. necessarily, and that things might just sort. There's might be a little bit more of a seismic shift going on. It may not, any improvements, some improvement, but it may never get back to what it was during the bubble.
Well, before the boom, I think consumers had kind of an unrealistic expectation that house prices would always go up, that housing was a risk-free investment, and all of a sudden, my gosh, it went down. And so I think there's a much more realistic sense that this is not a risk-free investment, that housing wealth needs to be more widely diversified. So that may help things like the stock market.
Yeah, I think the government was pushing this idea, too, that home ownership was an unabashed good and everybody should get a home. I mean, there was government policies that promoted this. And right. And plainly, if you want to talk about a seismic shift, it's that you better have the financial wherewithal to get into this. And I think that's on the government side. And I think you're right that is on the consumer side, that a lot of people are realizing that if you cannot afford that home, the foreclosure process is just something you do not want to get caught up in.
And the transient nature of the workforce, I think, is really taken root in these younger generations, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to live here for more than 2 or 3 years, and they feel very comfortable with that. I want to move on. They don't want to get tied down to a house.
Right. And I think the other seismic shift you talked about was coming into the city, and that is, it's consumer attitudes toward that, and it's the willingness of the developers and the banks to build downtown, and that's why you're seeing these apartments go up, the big ones and just even small ones, but it's Central City, it's in all the inner city neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. It's really spread out. That's been a remarkable story over the last year or two.
Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, they said it would never happen, that it wouldn't succeed. But Columbus is a very different looking city when you fly over it these days.
So exciting.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, it is. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. My guests are Bill Lafayette, he's an economist and owner of Regionomics, and also Doug Buchanan, managing editor for Columbus Business First. If you want to talk about what's ahead for the local economy in 2013, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This week, 89.7 NPR News would normally be doing our winter membership drive. But because of sustaining memberships, we've been able to eliminate this pledge drive. Sustaining members of the future of WOSU, your $15 or $20 per month recurring gift will ensure the highest quality of programming and the least amount of on-air pledge drives. Don't wait to renew your membership. Call 1-866-897-9678 or visit us at WOSU.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Wellness Wednesday begins with a discussion of dieting trends and cancer research. Stay with us for Wellness Wednesday from 11 till noon. 14 degrees in downtown Columbus, a high of 19 today. Expect some snow showers late this afternoon, about a half an inch of accumulation. Another inch of snow is possible tonight, a low of 11. Support for 89.7 comes from the Wellington School, where children are encouraged to discover and develop their unique potential in preschool through grade 12. Wellington will host a prospective family visit day on Wednesday, January 30th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. More at wellington.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about the Central Ohio economy going forward into 2013. My guests are Bill Lafayette. He's an economist and owner of Regionomics. Also, Doug Buchanan, managing editor for Columbus Business First. If you would like to join the conversation, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We were talking about small businesses and the importance of small businesses hiring, you know, and those hiring trends. But small businesses start with entrepreneurship. And Bill, you've said that Central Ohio doesn't look as great when it comes to that category.
No, surprisingly enough, when you look at the percentage of businesses that are locally owned, when you look at the percentage of businesses that are small in Central Ohio, we are near the bottom of the barrel. Out of the 363 metro areas in the country, we rank 350th in the percentage of retail stores that are locally owned. And that's a serious, serious problem that affects our economic vitality.
Well, this circles back to what we were saying a minute ago before the commercial break, that you know, we haven't had that concentration of people in this central city. And I think that part of what the reason for what Bill, the statistic he is citing, is that we traditionally have been a suburban, car-based city in Central Ohio, and that is much easier to have chain stores. You have shopping centers on the outskirts. And I think as Columbus kind of folds in on itself and starts to fill in the central city, that you should start to see more of these entrepreneurs, mom-and-pop shops, start to open, much like what has happened in the short north over the past X number of years, as they've gotten that concentration of residents and concentration of businesses that just feeds on itself.
But we shouldn't leave that to chance. We need to be very deliberate in linking somebody who wants to start a business with all the resources that are out there to help them start that business and kind of give them the confidence that they need to think, well, gee whiz, I can do this. So it was just like me when I left the W-2 world to go out on my own. My first stop was a small business development center. I just shared with them my idea. Does this make sense? Can I make money on this? Are there landmines that I'm not thinking about? I wonder how many people know about the availability of that resource.
And it's not just that. I mean, we do have new incubators in Columbus. So on the tech side, Tech Columbus runs them, not only in Columbus, but Dublin, Westerville. I think there's one in New Albany. And then there are other incubators as well. And then if you notice, the Columbus in the city budget that they were going to add $400,000 from the surplus that we had last year that was going to go toward four incubators. A couple of them, I think, already in existence, and then a new one in Linden, and then there was one more, you know, all toward getting this idea that if you have an inkling of a business idea, you ought to be able to walk in, just like Bill did, and say, is this crazy? And if they say it's not, then they're going to point you toward those funding resources to get you started.
Now, Columbus Business First wrote recently about the region adding resources for entrepreneurs, especially women, a big untapped group, or very little, you know, they're just starting. There's the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, which looks at things to do for women to help women and girls with their lives, but we're talking about business.
Yeah, there's a new angel investment fund called X Squared Angels. Those are for very young businesses, small loans. ECDI, the Economic Community Development Institute, I believe that's what that stands for, also has micro loan funds, including some that that specifically target women-owned businesses. In Westerville, there's the Women's Small Business Accelerator that recently opened. Same type of deal, advice and resources for funding.
And they're not necessarily for low-income women. They're
for any woman.
And you don't have to be...
You don't have to qualify, right?
By
some kind of an income. It's just strictly, do you have a good idea? Do you have a business plan? And do you have funding? And if you, and they will help you with all of those things. I mean, the idea is, as kind of Bill was pointing out, we just need to have these sprouts of business ideas, you know, spreading across the city, because that's where a lot of our job growth is going to come from. It's all well and good to lure a big corporate headquarters here or for Honda to invest millions of dollars. But, you know, for a vibrant city and for vibrant job growth, we need these small business. We need these entrepreneurs to feel like they can make it.
Why is it that entrepreneurs or those the small businesses, the mom and pop, businesses do better in, you know, in the middle of a city versus out in the suburbs?
Well, it's a community fabric kind of a thing, I think.
I don't know that there's any reason why they should. Maybe it's simply the way that the development happened. I'm familiar with a number of really, really tremendous locally owned restaurants on the northwest side. So it can happen anywhere. It needs to happen everywhere.
I think there's maybe a thing about driving by something versus walking by it.
Could be.
You might just drop in if you're walking by it, and driving by is a hassle.
Yeah, walkable communities is a big buzzword in community development these days. You're seeing it not only in the central city of Columbus. That's what they're trying to do is create these walkable communities. But the suburbs are starting to do it as well. I know Dublin has a long-term plan to create a walkable stretch along 161.
Worthington would love a cap over 270.
Yes.
But again, in the suburbs that have that small core of downtown in Worthington, Westerville and whatnot, and even in Dublin, you do have a thriving business community, as small as it may be. And I think what the idea is then to just keep adding on to that and building on it.
And another issue is creating communities that people can grow old in.
Yes.
That was a big problem with Dublin.
Yeah, correct. And that's all part of it, is creating a variety of housing stock and creating a variety of housing that is within walking distance of all the amenities that you would need, so that you don't have to then just drive into a self-contained retirement community.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea of entrepreneurial development has real, real promise for some of our lower-income neighborhoods. There's an initiative up in Cleveland that's targeted the University Circle area, which is one of the most impoverished areas of the city. And the hospitals got together with the city and the Cleveland Foundation, several other partners, to start this initiative where employee-owned and operated businesses would grow to serve the community, to serve the hospitals, like a commercial laundry.
Right. That's been talked about a lot.
Yeah.
It's
and
big. They employ a lot of people.
We can do that here.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to join the conversation. What we do have here that no other city in the state does is the state capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been said since I moved here 24 years ago that Columbus is recession-proof because of the number of because of Ohio State, and the state government is centralized here. But government's down 2,800 jobs. It's lost 7,000 over the last 5 years, and apparently doesn't necessarily dominate the economy.
Right. That 2,800 job loss is what my forecast expects to see for 2013, and that's going to bring us up to a total of 10,000 jobs and counting. The thing, though, that most people don't realize is that government isn't nearly as dominant as a lot of people think. Our concentration of federal, state, and local government workers is actually a touch below average for an economy this size, even one that's not the state capital. Hmm. And that's simply because we've got one of the largest state capitals in the nation.
Mark and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thank you very much, Ann, Doug, and Bill. Regular listener to your show, Ann. Great show.
Thank you.
And I regularly listen to these three gentlemen, or these two gentlemen with you, and they're always produce a very good show. So,
thank
my question,
you. Thank you.
My question, you're welcome. My question is, what degree can the economy be influenced by significant training programs to re-educate workers whose skills are no longer applicable in today's economy, who maybe have been unemployed for long-term for periods of time, to re-educate them or retrain them in areas like in medical, in skilled technology? But then what are the challenges because of the budget deficit, both at the national, state, and even at the local levels? I want to get the the guest's idea of how those things influence this economy, if any. Thank you very much. I'll take my answer, your answers offline.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. I think that's one of the most important things that we need to focus on. There's this serious mismatch of the skills that workers have and the skills that employers need. And retraining folks is going to help them. It's going to help the employers, too. It's going to help the economy overall. We have to take a real holistic view of training, though. We have to train both for technical skills and for soft skills, the ability to communicate, the ability to show up on time, the ability to work with others, and so on.
Yeah, as the caller alluded to, one of the biggest problems is going to be finding the money to do this. They're just in a time of shrinking government budgets. It's almost like infrastructure spending. You have to make a commitment to spend more now on training, hoping and believing that it will then bring you increased benefits as you try to match the job market up. Because as Bill said, there's no question that there is a skills mismatch right now. As an earlier caller alluded to, as the middle class jobs, especially in manufacturing and some other industries, have gone away. The longer these workers have been unemployed, the more their skills get out of date. Mm-hmm. Now, one bright spot, I don't know if you saw the casino money.
Yeah.
They put aside, I think it was $20 million of new casino money toward a worker training program. And I think it was accounted for in a day. I think the applications just were flooding into the state as soon as that came open. The need is obviously there. I just don't know if we're going to have the money.
Ultimately, what we need is a public-private partnership, a whole series of them.
And then how well do industry and the educators, whoever they might be, communicate with each other about what they need so that you can turn it around fast enough? Mm-hmm. For instance, when the shale drilling started up two years ago now. There weren't enough trained workers to do that particular kind of job. Now there's a couple of colleges and so forth that are working on it, but turnaround has to be imperative, particularly with a business like that. That's sure it's going to last some decades, but it will end eventually.
We need to have serious dialogues among education training providers, among employers, among workforce professionals, and that needs to be more than a every 6 month coffee break.
And I think there is a real role for the state here in facilitating that, mm-hmm. because Governor Kasich has railed against what he calls foreigners, meaning people from other states, coming in to take these oil and gas jobs because it's effectively a brand new industry, or certainly we do not have the people right now to man what's looking like the demand for oil and gas jobs. Mm-hmm. One way to do that, as Bill says, would be to to some kind of a public-private partnership to make sure that these programs are in place, because otherwise the companies will have no choice but to bring in jobs from West Virginia and Wyoming and North Dakota and wherever they can find them.
People who are experienced and have boots on the ground right away. Experience is an important thing. There might be a lot of people out there training, but ultimately, how can you blame a manufacturer or an oil drilling company for wanting to have the best that they can get?
Sure.
Scott and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Scott.
I just wondering if your guest could comment on how they think that the Managed Care Act or Obamacare and the increased regulations and taxes, if they believe that, first of all, affects businesses and their hiring, and to what extent is that keeping us from growing more?
And it hasn't really even gone into effect completely yet. But Doug Buchanan?
Well, certainly anytime you increase regulation, businesses complain and say that that it will impact their hiring decisions. So on that score, yes, it's not going to help. But again, I think the long-term goal here, once this is implemented, is to take some of that healthcare burden off of companies, the health insurance burden off of companies, so that it's not part of not part of the hiring decision at all. Because quite frankly, the problem right now, before Obamacare, is that health insurance costs have been skyrocketing, and there's just been no effective long-term way to keep them under control. And if you want to talk about something that's suppressing job creation, it's spiraling health insurance costs.
And something that's suppressing income.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's unless you, and again, there have been many things that have been tried and just nothing has worked. So, is there a short-term component to that? Yes. Anytime there's regulation. But again, you almost have to try something to solve this problem on a complete holistic way, or else it's not going to go away.
Ultimately, it leads to a more healthy workforce.
Well, Bill Lafayette, we're going to have to end it there and maybe continue the conversation later. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Ann.
And also Doug Buchanan. Thanks a lot, Doug, for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.